Welcome to NutGunner.com. Today we got Tony Garmon with us. We're going to give him a few questions, grill him a little bit on his fan film that he did based on Indiana Jones. And welcome, Tony. How are you doing today?
Good.
So you wrote, produced, directed, and starred in Indiana Jones and the Staff of Ra. How did the project come about?
Well, David Garrison, the guy who plays Abner, he's my boss. We do land surveying. And one day we were doing a job, and he asked me if I knew what a fan film was, and I told him no. And he showed me many, many Star Wars fan films on the internet. And him being a huge Indiana Jones fan, wanted to do an Indiana Jones fan film. So I said, okay, let's do it. And that's pretty much how it came along, and we really didn't think it would get off the ground, really. And we just asked some people if they wanted to help, and everyone was willing to do it.
Well, that's pretty cool. Yeah, we've seen a few Star Wars fan films.
We have, yeah.
Especially just before the first of the new episodes came out, everyone was watching all those fan films on there, and it was definitely something to get your thirst quenched.
No shortage.
Yeah, get your thirst quenched before you actually saw the movie. And now with Indiana Jones 4 supposedly coming out next year?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, hey.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to have to do another one.
I personally think they need to leave it alone, but that's my opinion.
Yeah, that might be a wise opinion. Too.
True. Well, before this, did you have any movie-making background? I guess, do you have a movie-making background?
Well, when I went to college, I started off in journalism, and then I did about 2 years of so-called film school in at Georgia State University. I think I probably could have learned more in elementary school. Yeah. But I worked in Atlanta a little bit on some production and sports broadcasting. Did a few gigs, and then I took some acting classes. But it all sparked from my senior year in high school. Got a production class. It was the first production class that our high school offered. It was kind of a news program for our high school. And we all had a specific thing to do. I had to run a certain piece of equipment. And one day my English teacher gave us a project, and she asked us to do a good job on a project for a book. And she gave us a group of four. And I took that group, took the book, and wrote a script to it, and shot it with videotape, and did the old-fashioned editing with it, and fell in love with film or video making from that point. It was kind of just, I just kind of fell into it and enjoyed it. But no true real production education. I really learned more from just working around it than I really did doing it. And I really enjoyed it.
Is this your first project then?
This is my first full project, yes.
Okay.
That's pretty interesting. I remember back in high school, we did the same thing. We had an applied English course, I believe it was
called. And, right.
We ended up making a video, me and a couple other guys, and we got a good grade on it, but it was for a storybook, and they were going to show it to little kids, and they decided that wasn't a good idea with our project. So, I guess, what can you share with us on the writing process of the film and the storyboarding and stuff like that, and what kind of how you work your way through that?
Okay, the first thing I did was, first, obviously, we had to come up with the idea, and being a fan film, I needed to approach it. I needed to know who was going to commit themselves to act in this, because obviously no one had acting experience in this film. I mean, Marion was played by my wife. You know, the guys at work played the Nazis and the henchmen, and David played Abner. But I wanted to get David into it. So I went through the Raider.net, which is the Indiana, they have a storyboard of Indiana Jones's life that George Lucas, I think, came up with. And in 1926, which would have put him at my age at the time, he went off with Abner and found the Staff of Ra. So I decided to do that one. And I pretty much, when I write, I just sit down. And I think I wrote that 30-minute script, which is 30-minute script is going to be about 30 pages because it's a minute a page. And I think I wrote it within a week, about 2 hours a night. And then we edited it down just a little bit, and we changed it a little. We didn't change it really as much at all when we shot. We pretty much went verbatim. Storyboard, we kind of storyboarded a little bit, but it's hard to do when you don't know where you're going to be filming. Everything was really last minute when we could get people to let us film on their sites. So storyboarding sounds like a good idea, but when you get out in the field, it never really helped as much on a fan film.
All right, so a lot of your camera work and stuff like that, then where it might be normally written in, fade out, and stuff like this was kind of on the fly then when you were doing that.
Most of it was on the fly. I did give myself general ideas, like if I wanted a medium shot or a long shot. Camera movement was very, very little purposely. One being because Indiana Jones is not a very moving camera film. The other being because there's nobody to move the camera.
Yeah, and not having a steady cam might be a problem with that, I suppose.
Yeah, and in this film, we used a digital camera. It was a DVD camera. 6 months after we filmed it, a friend of mine bought me a high definition Sony camera, which I wish I'd have had then.
Yeah,
I
bet. Nice.
Yeah, it would have been perfect. There's a lot of shots in our uneditable. I mean, I put them in there because I wanted. It was part of the story. But once we filmed something, there wasn't going back and doing refilming. It was, you know, filming it once and going on and telling the story and not worrying about making it aesthetically perfect, you know. But I think everyone did a good job on making it happen. That's a big thing. I mean, talking about it's one thing, but making it happen is another.
Was that frustrating for you then, not being able to go back and edit it?
Yeah, some of the shots, you know, sometimes we'd film in the dark, sometimes we'd film in the light, and not really having a good monitor, you would never really know what kind of exposure you had on your film or on your digital film. So there's some things I could help, but there's certain things that I really, really got frustrated with, but I really couldn't ask people to come out and spend any more time on it because we lacked a lot of time on this thing. I think if you add up the spent film filming it, I don't think it equals 24 hours. If you take each Saturday that we filmed on it, we filmed about 2 hours each Saturday, and we did a scene each Saturday. So, I mean, when you add up the actual film time, we really rushed it, but we knew we had to, and I think, but still then I was really happy with what we could get with what time we had.
Well, I suppose having your boss in on it made it easy to at least schedule for it.
Yeah, yeah. It was all Saturdays. So.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, it was pretty. I just couldn't believe that everyone gave up their Saturdays for this. It took us about
surveyors
8 months
work on Saturdays.
To film.
You mentioned the camera you used. Was there other equipment you used?
Yeah, we used the Sony DVD camera. It's the one where you put the actual DVD inside of it. It shot pretty well. It actually made editing a little bit easier because it breaks it down in the just to transfer straight to the computer with no problems, and you pretty much get real-time quality.
Here we go. You had some historical backgrounds, the cars, the trains. How did the setup go for these shots?
Okay, well, the cars at our office building, the building is owned by Lewis Cooper. He also owns part of our company, and he is, let's just say he's financially pretty happy. But he has a hangar where he used to keep his helicopter. And one day, this is actually while we were getting ready to shoot some scenes. We didn't even know he had the cars until one day we went into the hangar, and there were all these cars. And the one that actually ran, the one that you actually saw us driving, that was a Dodge Brothers. That was not, and it ran. I mean, that thing drove like a charm. The other ones, we actually pulled out into the parking area and used those. And then the train comes from, it's a local train that they ran here in Georgia. It's owned by the commissioners. I think it's the Board of Commissioners or something in Barrow County. And we went down there and told them what we were doing, and they lent us the entire building for the day. And actually, I don't know if it was on purpose, but they had a cop down there, I guess, to make sure nobody interrupted us. So,
wow.
That was an interesting day. That was a pure, that day right there was a pure voiceover day. We got the train, we got the office, we got all that beautiful scenery. But next door, they were tearing down a McDonald's. they had this saw going off the entire time, and I'm talking ear piercing. So we had a voiceover that entire scene. That's what I remember. But that train was perfect. I loved that scene because it really added a lot to the time period. And that's what I wanted to do with our film, is find things to make you believe that you were back in that time.
It was very indie-esque.
Yeah.
So along those same lines, was it hard to hide anything modern and keep modern stuff out of the shots? I mean, did you have to get everybody that was going to be in the film of that day and make sure they didn't have their watches on so they wouldn't repeat the Sasquatch film or something like that, you know? Make sure they didn't have any modern equipment or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. The only thing I think we actually... I did was I had a knife on me, and somebody drilled me on the internet for having a knife in my pocket with a clip on it because they didn't have clips in. But if you're looking for that, then you know that's crazy.
If they had to go that far to look for it, you did a pretty good job.
when we try to keep things out of shot, everything visually we did pretty good. But I think I may have had a curb in one shot. Curb then. There's a few things here and there that really stand out. The biggest thing was sound. We're surrounded by three working small airports, and
jeez.
And they're constantly planes going overhead, and the train track that we filmed near, pretty much the entire filming of the movie was along this train track, and it's the busiest train track in the Southeast. And I think a train comes by every five to ten minutes a train comes through. So that drove me crazy, but, you know.
Well, it had to make your shots a bit difficult.
It made it fun. You know, what made it even worse was I was using the microphone I was using was a little bit too strong, and there would be shots I couldn't even hear a plane in, and I'd get back and edit it and there'd be a plane, you know. You'd hear a little propeller. So that kind of got on my nerves, but you can't really do much about it, can you?
No.
When you go to meet Abner in one of your shot, when you're at his office, there's a transition shot of you walking from one room to the next. What's involved in a shot like that?
The office scene you're talking about?
Yes.
Well, actually, going back to your last question, that was one of the issues I had with that one. The girl that was standing there, his secretary.
Yeah.
When she called me in, I had to actually have her standing at that very place because behind her was a security system, and I think it was something else that was real modern that was in the background. So she had to block that. But really, to shoot that, you just it's hard to explain. You just can give me more detail on that. I mean, what?
Well, you have the smooth transition from one room to the next. Do you set up two cameras? Was it at two takes?
No, the entire movie was shot with one camera.
Okay.
The entire movie was shot with the DVD camera. I'll put it to you this way. When everyone came in to do filming, I told everyone, I'm going to be shooting you at different angles. I'm going to be setting the camera up and saying action. And I told everyone, when we get done filming for the day, you're going to think we didn't get anything done. because the movie was in my head. The movie you see on the screen was in my head. I saw everything. And when I would set up a shot, it would take me about 2 minutes to set up a shot, set my camera up. The worst part was shooting myself because I'd have to set it up and then go get into the shot. So I'd set it up and go get in the shot and call action and then do the shot. And then I would come up and then shoot her with a camera shot. And then somebody would, you know, call cut. And then I'd set the camera up in the office to watch me coming in. That whole process was individual shots, one by one. But doing something like that, a movement shot, is some of my favorite work because I usually only take one take or two. It doesn't really take a lot of takes because, like I said, I can see the shot in my mind. And I know no one else does that's working with me, so I know I'm confusing the crap out of everybody when we're filming. they're thinking, this guy's crazy. What are we doing? You know, and then when I show them the footage 3 or 4 days later, they say, we shot that? We did that? And
oh, yeah.
It's kind of confusing, but, you know, it all works out in the end, you know.
I'm sure a lot of the magic comes in the editing room a lot of times.
Right. It's all editing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all editing. That's why it's good to have the person who's directing it always have a hand in editing it because, you know, he or she can do on the computer what they see in the mind.
Very cool.
It was definitely fun. I enjoy it.
You had more or less some period costumes there. How did you go about picking those out, or did you design anyone specifically for the film?
I pieced Davis together through some modern outfits that we found. Obviously, my outfit came from my jacket is the original Indiana Jones jacket. It's the Westett jacket from England, which is awesome because, I mean, just as a jacket, I love the jacket.
Who wouldn't want to have an Indiana Jones jacket?
People always compliment me on the jacket because you just can't find it in stores. The way they made it, they actually had it fitted for me. And really, it was not expensive at all. I think it was like $280, you know, $300 for a leather jacket, which is average. The hat came from Australia. Like $20. And I just used my church going shoes, and I used some Banana Republic pants because they looked a little bit older. And I found the bag online at a World War II site, and all it is a gas mask bag. And that's what it actually was in the movie, was a gas mask bag. And if you noticed in the movie, I didn't wear it until the end. You know, toward the end when it was Abner's, I made the movie to where it was Abner's bag. And then when I got the diary and everything from him, I took his bag and used it for the rest of the movie. And at the end of the movie, I was going to hand it back to him, and he said, no, you keep it.
Yep, yeah. I remember that.
I kind of added that in there.
Yeah, that was part that kind of stuck out a little bit.
I actually had the oh moment right there.
Yeah.
I usually didn't have the moments until after I got done editing, and I said, hey, that was cool.
If it's not, you can make it cool, right?
Well, one of them things where it's like, crap, I didn't have a bag for the first part of the movie. Now what do I do? So everything kind of happens by accident, and it kind of turns out to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I have to say, I was Mr. James over here pointing me. He's like, hey, you got to watch this this film. I'm like, oh, it's another fan film, you know, and I got to watch it, and I was very impressed by this film.
Thank you.
And just the
he's a hard man to impress,
yes,
too. Trust
I am.
Us.
Yes, there, as with anything, it's a fan film, and I judge it as a fan film. But I mean, there's stuff in there that I could really see. I mean, there's parts in there where you avoided the cheesy stuff by, like, for instance, putting the revolver a little bit out of the shot.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to like try to make some kind of cheesy effect, like making it look like it's going off or anything like that. But I realize that when I look at the film, but when I'm watching the film, I don't realize that stuff. I just say, hey, that looks really cool. You know, you did a really good job, I think, with editing and keeping the stuff simple, but making it look like it was like it was professional. You know.
Well, that's the part of making an Indiana Jones film is keeping it simple. It was a B movie to begin. They wanted to make it like a B movie,
right?
So you really can't go crazy with it. Plus, you know, you're limited with what you have. If you try to do more with what you don't have, it turns out bad. But, you know, with the gunshots, the ricochets, I was standing there, and there's these beautiful rocks about 30 minutes from my office, and the rocks actually were laid like that, and they're really, really giant rocks, and they actually balance on each other. And I put the officer down behind the rocks, and I said action, and I didn't tell him what I was going to do. I said, I want you to shoot your gun, and then I want you to hide behind the rock. So he wouldn't expect what I was going to do. To rocks and dirt and threw it at him. And he kind of reacted. You see how he kind of jumped? And
right.
You know, I did the same thing, because, I mean, even though I knew the rocks and dirt was coming, I didn't want to get some in my eye, so I covered up like I was covering up from a gunshot. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's really a good idea. A little bit of onset motivation.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a motivation.
Could have been even more motivational, but I suppose shooting at people, which wouldn't be very safe.
Well, I think they frown upon that most places.
That would be Cecil B. DeMille. Cecil B. DeMille used to do that. He used to fire off a real gun on the set when somebody was shooting a fake gun and scare the living crap out of people.
Yeah.
All right. I guess as far as the casting process goes, I know there were a lot of your friends and coworkers and stuff like that, but is that pretty much what you did? Just say, hey, you want to be in my movie?
Yeah, I did that. The guy who played the Nazi officer, he's a World War II buff, so he really helped us on getting a World War II rifles that he had, except for in the fight scene. I had to use a regular gun because I didn't have his gun at the time. Plus, I didn't want to leave it on the ground because they were really expensive. But casting was important, because that's how I wrote my script. I wrote my script to match whoever I was writing for, because, like I said, they're not actors, so I needed to write the script so, you know, they can just be themselves but still act at the same time. And the only funny story was, after we were halfway through filming, my boss David found a picture. It was actually a painting or a drawing that was done by a guy that was making covers for books for Indiana Jones, and there's actually a shot of Abner in there. And Abner was supposed to be played by Wilford Brimley, the guy from Cocoon.
Oh, okay.
With the mustache.
Right, right.
But aged 30 years. So, and they kind of had the same southern accent and southern drawl. So it kind of worked out perfectly because, you know, we accidentally made Abner like he was supposed to be, you know, a southern character, which David, you know, he's I'm from Georgia and I have an accent from Georgia, but he's from Georgia and he has a what we call a draw. So yeah, it actually worked out perfectly.
Yeah, I'm kind of a gun nut myself, and we're some of the. I saw you probably had some Mausers there. Were they authentic German Mausers? Or?
Yes, they were. They were donated by Lee Barnett's friend. His name escapes me right now, but him and his friends are buffs for World War II, and they were actually they were Mausers. So.
Oh, that's cool.
I think you made shoot a
shooter cool remember
here.
I got a. I don't have an authentic German Mauser.
Ah.
Did you get any funny outtakes during the filming process?
One of the most memorable ones I know is at the river scene when Abner walks up and clocks the guy from the back. We shot that 4 times, and it never worked. And I believe on the 5th time, Abner went to punch the officer, who was played by Ben Wallace, and he just slipped on the wet surface and busted his butt. I had to edit out the laughing in the shot, but, man, I was laughing. I was laughing my butt off, but it worked perfect. It worked perfect because he actually looked like he got knocked down. And another thing was I ain't going to say the stupid horse because the horse was great. One day, the original opening of the movie, which I think is one of my favorite parts of the movie, was not in the movie. That was the last thing we shot because we actually had until one day I was driving in front of near our office, and this lady had horses, and I asked her right then, can I come film with your horses? And that afternoon, I was over there filming the opening horse scene. And then we went over to Mark's house. Mark played Forrestal. And we went to his house by his lake and filmed the cannibal opening scene to match the horse scene galloping away. And that horse was in its own pasture. And I didn't know this before, but when a horse is in its own pasture, it will go where it wants to go. And it took me under that tree constantly and knocked my hat off, about knocked me off the horse. But the shot that you see before it goes to the college scene was me basically almost being knocked off the horse, and I cut it right then. So that horse pretty much almost killed me 3 or 4 times. That was no fun. But all in all, man, like you said, you judge a fan film by what it is. It's a fan film. But as long as people have fun, I think that's the most important thing about fan films. We had a blast, and we'll probably do it again. You know, I just think it was so fun, and I think a lot of people learned a lot about filmmaking just from a simple fan film. You know, and if I did a job of telling a story and my friends having fun, I think I succeeded, and I hope people like it as much as we did.
Well, actually, spills into our next question there. What's been the general response to your movie?
Well, the response has been great. We've actually had more response now than we did then, I guess because circulation takes a while on the Internet. We got a lot of people that, obviously, they love the cars. They love the horse scene. They loved the look of the film being really Indiana Jones-ish. I had a lot of compliments of Indiana Jones, which was really great because when me and David decided how I was going to play Indiana Jones, I said, I'm not going to play Indiana Jones. I'm going to play Harrison Ford. So I think everybody that has contacted me about this fan film said that, you know, they could tell that I was being Harrison Ford and not Indiana Jones, which is a lot of people, when they do fan films, try to be Indiana Jones, you know. And but pretty much everything you've noticed in the film, everyone noticed. And I've had some people tell me it's the worst thing they've ever seen in their life.
Oh,
you know,
pretty mean.
Because it wasn't theirs. I mean, I had a guy that told me, oh, this is just terrible. Here, watch my film. And I watched this film, and it was shot in his backyard. And it was, and I can honestly say, when I told him how I thought of his film, I said, you know, that was good. Sorry you didn't like mine. I wasn't mean to him about it, but he didn't really have anywhere to come from. And you know, a lot of people were pretty nice about it. And people who knew what a fan film was gave me a lot of compliments. And people who didn't know what a fan film was and that they thought we spent thousands of dollars, they went in there and really looked at the film with the comb, a fine comb, and those kind of people I just ignored, and the people who liked it, I thanked. So, and that's really what you got to do with anything in life. You take the good and you take the bad, and you kind of understand where they're coming from, and you kind of understand, you know, some people just don't like anything you do, you know, and that's fine with me. You know, I'm happy
I don't
with
anything Browncoat does.
Well, that's true, and I don't like anything he does, so we make a good team. real quick, you seem to almost have luckily stumbled on just some very Indiana things just almost by accident. You said The Cars by Lewis Cooper, the Woman with the Horse. That's almost just pure luck. I mean, I don't know where to go with that as a question, but I guess just a statement. That's almost like...
like it was meant to be.
You were meant to do a fan film.
Faded almost, yeah.
Well, it was everything was meant to be. I can't believe that. You know, the people who worked on the film have very busy lives. I mean, a lot of them run a multi-million-dollar corporation. You know, they don't have time to do a lot of things, and they found time to do what we did. Everything was a blessing, I think.
What I was kind of going with that is you said people look at that, you know, like you spent thousands and thousands of dollars. I guess I can see how they would think that, you know, because I'm sure renting the cars, you know, even for a day or so, you can several thousand dollars just there, and a horse for the same thing, train shot. So, I mean, at least, you know, from their point of view, we can see, hey, it's possible that you can look at this film and say, oh, yeah, he spent several thousand dollars making this.
I think we actually added up how much we spent, and every bit of the cost came from my costume, and that was it. I'm trying to remember. I think we spent somewhere around $500-$600 for the entire film. And everything else came from just, I mean, the mask for the cannibals. It was like $1.95, and you know, the bag, even the bag, the gas mask bag was, I think, $9.95. I mean, the jacket was expensive, but I like the jacket anyways. I think the jacket's a beautiful looking leather jacket. And the hat was $90, like I said, and everything else, not adding in gasoline, except for gas wasn't $3 a gallon then, but, it barely anything. And David already owned the camera. And the editing suite I had already had, you know. So, you know, we really didn't spend anything at all.
So where in Georgia did you find some swastika armbands, just out of curiosity?
Okay.
Yeah, good funny point.
Funny story number three. Okay. Lee contacted a group in North Dakota, I think it is. Okay. And they sell Nazi replica stuff, all right? So he contacts these people, he gets the swastikas from them, and he gets something else from them. And we thought that was it. It's over. You know, we got our stuff. That's it.
Uh-oh.
Then he starts getting letters from people in jail.
Join the Aryan Brotherhood or something.
Wanting to have, you know, support to get the Nazi Brotherhood out of jail. he's getting all this stuff and all these newsletters from these Nazi people. It was... So one day what I was going to do is I didn't do this, but I had it all planned out because he was so nervous about how, man, these people were driving. He wanted to get off their list because they were driving crazy. And I told David, I said, one day, I see David's brother was in the movie too. He's a police officer, and he was also over in Iraq for a while. I told him I was going to get his friends, who are also police officers, to go over to his house one day and tell him to go ahead and get dressed for the scene. And have him open the door up on him one day, and him being on his Nazi outfit, and say something about the letters, and start toting him off to the car. But I never got around to doing that. But it was crazy. That was really funny. That swastika stuff. You think it's just going to be a simple internet transaction? It ends up being, you know, the brother.
It never is.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering. I thought I was thinking at first a funny story might be somebody accidentally forgetting to take it off and wearing it around town.
Oh.
Well, a funny a story about that train, the train that we used back when it was being used, and I can't remember. I think it's the Gainesville Midland train, and the Midland train's signal used to be a swastika. Swastika was a sign that was an Indian sign.
Yeah, it's Native American sign.
It's a Native American sign, and when it became Nazi signal, they took it off the train, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yep. So. I believe the Native American one's backwards from the from the German one, but either way, you know, it's
close enough.
Close enough, yeah. I guess one of our final questions here is, do you have any advice for filmmakers or, you know, trying to get a project off the ground, you know, people maybe want to do a fan film or anything like that that you'd like to give out?
Well, yeah, good advice really is obviously to have fun with it. Stay within your limitations. And really, here's the most important thing, because, you know, we're in an era of CGI, which I'm not really CGI stuff. My friend Rhett is, but I'm not. I'm more about telling a story. And that's what I think young filmmakers should do. Is to never forget you got to tell a story, because if it looks great and there's no story, then you didn't do your job.
And it's ends up like Pirates of the Caribbean 3. Then
I was very disappointed with that movie. I just saw it on Friday. I think really just tell a story and have fun with it and just use your imagination. So that's really what all I can say, unless you have $1 million.
For $1 million, I'm not going to make a fan film. I'm going to go someplace and use my $1 million and live on it for the rest of my life.
Exactly. I have a question. Where did you hear about? Where did you see the movie at?
I was just browsing around on the internet and came across it and watched it and liked it, and then I passed along.
I found it off on theraider.net.
Yep, I have a friend here works in IT, so I think he gets a lot of browsing around on the internet done.
I hear you. Well, you definitely, this past year I got some cosmetic work on my teeth. I got some braces because I'm actually thinking about going back into the acting scene around Georgia, and we're definitely probably going to do a really, really short opening to an Indiana Jones movie. Like you see the opening that we have with the cannibals and stuff like that. I would definitely keep your eyes open because we're going to do another one of those, and I expect this next one to be 100 times better than what we did this past one, equipment-wise and aesthetically. I think now I know what I can do, and I definitely keep your eyes out for something like that because we're gonna do something like that pretty shortly.
Well, we'll definitely keep our eyes open for that. I mean, if you look at the stuff that's been going on lately, I mean, with the internet and the way that you can get stuff around to people that you normally couldn't, you know, get these this media out to. I mean, if you look at things like just before the Star Wars things come out, they were showing all these fan films like on a Discovery Channel. And there's like Red versus Blue. I don't know if you've ever seen that, which is to deal with the Halo thing in Microsoft and the Xbox, and they endorse them now. And a lot of these people are getting endorsed by the actual movies themselves. So I think it's definitely a growing art form, if I that want to say.
Yeah.
Well, all my friends wanted me to try out for the On the Lot show, and they wanted me to submit some stuff.
Right.
But it was so last minute, I didn't get around to it. But I'm definitely going to do it next year. I want to submit something next year.
If the show's still around.
Things like that are going to be really cool. So I look forward to next year maybe submit something to that. If I can ask you questions.
Sure, go right ahead.
Individually, what was your favorite part of the movie? What was your favorite scene in the movie? I guess I like to find out information.
All right, who wants to start this one off?
You.
All right. I guess Shooter actually touched on my favorite part, was the actual the gunshot, the shootout scene.
Oh, yeah.
That was probably my favorite part, just because, as Shooter already pointed out, there isn't, you know, the cheesy, the CGI flash on the tip of the guns, and you the way you cut it out there, that it's not in the shot there, I thought, you know, it lent authenticity to it, and that was probably my favorite shot right there.
That's good.
I guess I'd have to say toward the ending, when you kind of realize that everything was tied in, it made sense with the first film.
That's really a good one too, yeah.
Really was like, wow, that's cool.
I guess for me, it's kind of a bittersweet thing. How you were talking about how you were trying to play Harrison Ford. And I really liked your depiction of Harrison Ford. And that was my favorite parts, where when you would say stuff, I don't remember, there was a part where you're entering the cave or something and you turn around and you're like, "So you coming?" or something like that. And it was a very good, portrayal. But the bittersweet part comes in where there was something, the timing was off on the editing just a little bit in there, where you turn around and it was almost like you waited for like a second or 2 seconds or something like that. And then you would say, you know, but the actual portrayal itself was really excellent. So that's why but that's the only reason it's bittersweet, is because there's something with the timing there with the editing or something like that. And that's my only real criticism with the whole movie, to tell you the truth.
Well, yeah, the accidents sometimes are the best things. That's great. I mean, the things that you guys said you liked are the things that I go back and watch. The gunfight scene, I love the gunfight scene. The only thing you didn't say was the opening. I watched the opening a few times. But, yeah, I mean, exactly what y'all said is really what I enjoyed about watching it again. And even after after making it, I criticize myself more than anybody in the world. Obviously, everyone does. Everyone criticizes themselves, but I really enjoy going back and watching this one, and that's how I know that I think I did a good job, just because I enjoy watching it myself, and I don't beat myself up watching it. And I think Steven Spielberg said the same thing about Raiders. He said that he's never watched one of his movies ever and enjoyed it. But on Raiders of the Lost Ark, he can watch it to this day and forget that he made it. And that's another thing for fan filmmakers, is don't criticize, don't beat yourself up. Don't enjoy it, you know, and watch it.
I wanted to ask you there real quick, Indy's sidekick, is that your brother?
The sidekick?
The cannibal, yeah.
Yeah, that's my brother.
Ah, okay. If we're going to bring up the slightest beefs we have, that was, I laughed when I saw him, because the wig on him, I was like, that's just pure comedy. And I wasn't sure if you meant it that way, but I did laugh. Did you? I laughed so hard at that part. I thought that was just, if that was your intent, then you did it well. If that was not your intent, well, that's how I took it.
Well, you got to understand who he is. Actually, it's kind of funny. He was just on Fox the other night. He was on So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh,
really?
That was him. He was the remember at the end on when they were in Atlanta on Thursday night, which is kind of crazy because I don't watch that show.
Me either.
So you'll have to describe it really well. So when we do watch it, we can see it.
He was the cowboy that danced at the end. He didn't make it on, but he was the Marine guy who was the cowboy. And he's been getting publicity all over the place because, I mean, they loved him on that show on So You Think You Can Dance. So that came on last week, and he's been getting eat up with all kinds of stuff. Now people are contacting him. You know, he was real inspirational on the show, but you got to understand, he looks like a Marine. And he had his head shaved, and he looks like a Marine. And I said, I don't want Indy's sidekick looking like he can beat Indiana Jones up. So I gave him a mullet wig. That thing was it was the most raunchiest mullet wig. And I don't remember where I got it from. Somebody had it. It didn't even fit your head right. It was
someone probably stole out of Billy Ray Cyrus's closet somewhere.
So when I put it on him, he's like, I ain't wearing this thing. And I was like, yeah, you are. And I put it on him. And I made it look as raunchy as I could make it look. Everybody laughs when they see that, and I think that's perfect, because he looks like somebody would be a sidekick to Indiana Jones.
Well, you got to keep yourself from being outdone when you're the main character.
When you're the hero,
that's right.
Oh yeah, exactly. You can't have Mr. the Marine walking in, and he could probably break everybody's necks, you know, if they're cannibals. So, and I don't know if you noticed or not, but that was the scene that we paid homage to with the scream. You know, when he gets jerked backwards.
Oh, right.
He goes, ah! You know, he does that little movie screen. That's the actual screen that's almost in every movie that's made. If you watch any action movie ever made, that scream is in there.
Now, I noticed that one thing was missing from the front. Unless I missed it, and it has been a few days since I watched the film, and I was trying to think, in every Indiana Jones film, they show the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
At the beginning.
You're talking about Paramount?
Oh, yeah, but they'll always show the mountain. They'll show the Paramount, and then they'll flip it to it to an actual mountain that they're looking at. Every single Indiana Jones film.
Well, come on, man. He's doing a fan film.
No. But before we get on to the last part, which you're going to do, right, is the rapid fire, which if you get put on the spot, we'll just redo it again. But I want to request something in your next movie. Now, I don't remember if you said you were going to do another Indiana Jones fan film of some sort, but if you do, I'd like to see someone running with bullets landing behind them as they're running.
Oh, jeez.
Bullets ricocheting behind them?
Yep. Now, the reason I say this is
because
I was
that a lot.
Yep,
yeah.
And I was watching a documentary on Steven Spielberg the other night, and the way he did it, and he did it as a kid in his films, is he'd put boards underneath the sand, so then as they ran, they stepped on the boards, and the dirt would fly up behind them. So just this little tip, I want to see that in your next one.
Well, you know that shot you said with the opening with the you usually see mountains?
Mm-hmm.
You notice I didn't do that. I did our logo, which was the dead tree, and then I brought it into the palm tree.
Oh, okay. That's. I guess I didn't quite notice that one.
Hey, go back and watch it. It's a dead tree, and our logo is the dead tree. All right.
Okay. And so you did do it. Did it with your logo. Okay.
When it comes on, the dead tree turns into a palm tree, and that's the most expensive shot of the movie. We went all the way down to Mexico to shoot that scene.
Wow.
I was on vacation in Mexico.
Yeah, here comes the truth now.
I turned back and I looked at it. I turned back and I was like, I had my video camera with me, thank goodness. And there was two huge palm trees coming up from the hotel. It was silhouette right in front of the hotel room. And I filmed it, and then I just kind of came down on the palm trees and then had it kind of turn into the woods we were in. So that's the most expensive shot of the movie. We went all the way to Mexico just to have that one shot. But hopefully it worked out.
All right. Well, we generally in our interviews we do a little segment called Rapid Fire, and it's just five questions that really have nothing to do with what we've been talking about, but it's just to kind of get to know you a little bit better as our person we're interviewing. So,
yeah, real quick off the top of your head, not too much thought into them.
Okay.
So, we'll start with that. Anything you're currently reading or listening to?
Currently reading or listening to, no.
No? Describe yourself in three words.
In three words. Corny, crazy, and loud.
All right.
We like him already.
Yep.
Who is the most influential person in your life?
Influential person in my life? I guess my father.
Okay. One person you'd like to meet?
I'd like to meet Steven Spielberg.
All right. If you had unlimited power to change one thing in the world, what would it be?
Gas prices.
Yes. All right. Well, we'll definitely put links to your movie in our notes and on our website. We do open this up here for anything you'd like to add at the end. You can ramble on about whatever you'd like or anything you'd like to add.
Any projects you got coming up or whatever.
All right. Well, if I'm going to ramble, I think I pretty much covered everything with my rambling that I already did. I just want to thank you guys for calling me and doing this. It really means a lot to know that people enjoy your work and it makes you want to do it again. I really hope I can continue doing this stuff and get better at it. And maybe, who knows, maybe something will pan out one day.
There you go.
That's really all life's about. I think I really don't believe in stuff like American Idol
Amen.
And you can dance.
Amen.
And things like that. I think real life comes at chance. I think if you're in the right place at the right time, things are going to happen for you. And that's really kind of how this fan film came along, and that's how I live life. I live life like that every day, and I recommend it to everybody else.
Yep. Good. I mean, if you do make the big time, then and you're not going to do it without the scene with somebody running and bullets ricocheting behind them.
Oh, my God.
But
How about this? I'll do my best on the next film to do that.
You know what's going to happen, though? He's going to see that, and he's going to make everyone go, hey, that was my idea.
Okay, where are you at right now? What state are you in?
Wisconsin.
Okay, Wisconsin. What we'll do is we'll hire you personally to come down and set that up for us. How about that? Because I'm not even going to tackle that.
Of flyer miles, I got to get rid of anyway.
He would get there.
There you go. Just come down and show me how to do. Because if I do it, if me and David try to do it, we'll try to do the real thing, and somebody might be.
Yeah, someone might get injured there. I mean, I wanna...
Okay, well, we're going to fire the gun at you, but just don't stop running.
I hope it's sighted well too.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah, I guess one more ramble is I got to send a comment again out to Harrison Ford and Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. Stop. Don't make the film. Don't ruin the trilogy. The kid from Transformers who's going to be in the next film, please, you know. Let's not make this the Star Wars Christmas special.
Oh.
All right, well, if they ever listen to our podcast, which is probably unlikely, they'll get your message.
I just had to say that because let's just leave it to fan films. Let's don't try to do an Indiana Jones 4 and find the Fountain of Youth. They just need to leave that alone. But again, guys, thank you very much for watching my film, and thank you for watching the entire film.
Thank you.
Thank you for making it. Thank you for being
honored to have people watch it.
Yeah, and once you get your next project on, maybe drop us an email, and maybe we'll take a look at it and do another interview.
I sure will. I'll do that.
All right.
Thank you for your time.